Scott, as we begin this next segment, you've been so helpful with your answers thus far. I have another question for you. Whose testimony would you most be most inclined to listen to and trust?
Yahweh's? I mean, Yahweh's, okay. The Torah. Yeah.
All right. So this begins, and God Almighty said. Now, at that point, are you preoccupied and say, oh, come, it's another, you know, bit of slime from the Quran or Hadith. This is something coming from Paul's poison pen. This is the latest statement from the Abominator. By comparison to those fellas, when it begins, and God Almighty said, does he have your attention?
He's got mine.
What do you think the likelihood is that what he said is beneficial, pertinent, and accurate?
Are you asking me if the person that created everything might be right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a pretty good chance.
You know, just think for a moment. He's the creator of the universe. That means that the universe appears to be a six-dimensional construct which puts the creator in the seventh dimension. And I say that because we know it's four-dimensional in the sense that it is space-time. The three dimensions of space plus time is a dimension. And to that, we have to add the two most influential, you can't even call them forces, you can't call them elements, you can't call them anything that we understand, but there are two things that are actually applying the single greatest influence over our universe. The space-time accounts for somewhere between 4% and 6% of the energy and matter, the influence, if you will, in our universe. 96%, between 94% and 96%, is comprised of energy that we know nothing about that has a repulsive effect, therefore creating division, choice, if you will, or a attractive effect, unknown matter. That has a attractive effect. Let's call that relationships, for example. So we know that the universe is at least six-dimensional. The reason we can't see these things, we can't detect these things, we can't describe these things that represent the preponderance of our universe is that they exist in dimensions beyond our capability of assessing. That's why a three-dimensional construct can't think, can't imagine time as infinite, and only can envision being stuck in the ordinary flow of it, and can't even possibly envision how time can intersect at a 90-degree angle the other dimensions. So, this is a creator that's in a seventh dimension that created a six-dimensional construct for the express purpose, according to him, to engage in a family relationship with those who choose to be part of his family. And when he is talking to us, because, you know, I think he's got other things that he could be focused on if he wanted to be. When he, as the creator of the universe and the author of life, takes the time to talk to us, what could be more important?
Nothing.
Can there be anything that's more important than the Torah?
Nothing.
How can Paul's dribble in the Christian New Testament rival Yahweh's testimony first person? How would anybody in their right mind prioritize Paul's contradictory, immoral drivel and say that, yeah, I'm going to base my faith on that as opposed to listen to what the creator of the universe told us directly in first person?
Well, they shouldn't. They shouldn't.
They shouldn't.
But they do, and they do it because it's easy. They don't have to do anything other than, yeah, I believe.
Oh, there you go.
That's why they do it.
So this is God speaking in first person. And God Almighty said, and here's what he said. So as for you, you should actually and continually observe my family, my covenant, you and your seed after you, throughout their generations and dwelling places and eras of time. Bar Rashid 17:9. So his advice, is there any part of this sentence that you find confusing? So as for you, you should actually and continuously observe, it's Shamar, carefully consider, diligently and consistently, paying especially close attention to the details so that you understand Yahweh's, my Beret, family-oriented relationship. You and your seed, your offspring, after you, throughout their generations, dwelling places, and eras of time, door. Any part of that complicated?
No.
You need a religious cleric to, or a scholar to tell you what God just told you.
Not at all, but...
Okay. Then maybe you could explain to me, how does one observe Bereth as a family? That's based on Be'eth, the Hebrew word for family and home. How do you observe Yahweh's home and observe his family? How would you do that? God just asked you to do it. How would you do it?
Well, you pay attention to what he says and show up when he asks you to come. I mean, party with him. And
yeah. Is this, are there any, did Yahweh draw any pictures in the Torah? Actual pictures. I'm not talking about symbolism here. I'm not talking about word pictures. I'm just saying, did he draw any pictures in the Torah?
No.
It's actually a trick question.
Well, it's a trick question.
No, he didn't, and yes, he did, because the letters that comprise the Hebrew words are all pictures.
Yeah, I was going to say, the letters themselves are pictures.
That's right. Okay. All right.
Plus the words themselves paint a pretty vivid picture.
Okay, so, but if you're paying attention to those pictures, the letters that are the pictures, you're reading the words, aren't you?
Definitely. And the words themselves paint a pretty phenomenal picture.
He describes it
well enough to where you should have a pretty vivid picture in your mind.
Right. Word picture. So the covenant is well described. So if you want to observe it, you have to read what's written about it.
Very much so.
That's it. And to observe, does observe mean to obey?
No.
Does observe mean to keep?
No.
Does observe mean... to use your eyes to witness what is before you?
It means to register what... Observe, it means to register what you're looking at and to register it as being significant. Observing...
There really is not much of a difference between observe and see. You know, but it's not like, did you see that? And somebody says, something went by. No, I missed it. To observe is a very specific kind of seeing. It's a discipline-focused form of seeing where you're trying to take in everything that's presented before you.
Observe means that you see something. You're seeing something, and you're applying significance to what you're looking at. So you look closer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Observing is the thing that you're looking at is significant to you, so you want to look closer. And when you observe, the things you observe are things that you usually can describe more fully to other people.
Okay. Now, since the only portrait of the covenant of this family relationship is the one that Yahweh painted in his Torah, there is no way to observe the covenant without observing the Torah, is there? By the way, if Yahweh told Abraham and his seed through him to continuously and actually observe his covenant for all time and all places through all generations. When Paul wrote in the second, I think it's the third or fourth chapter of his first letter, Galatians, that the covenant in the Torah was with Hagar and it enslaves. Is there any chance that he was speaking for this God that said that you should observe his one and only covenant for all time and all places? Continuously? May not think so.
I was muted. Sorry. No.
No. Impossible. You know, for all you Christians out there, it is impossible that Paul told you the truth. He lied about everything.
Well, there again, I mean, look at, if somebody tells, what's the rule? If it sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. What Paul basically told people was, all you got to do is say you believe, and you'll be good.
Yeah, that was it. But the worst thing about Paul is that you had to believe what he was saying. And what he was saying was the antithesis of what God was saying. If he was articulating the same message of God as opposed to demeaning and annulling the message of God, believing what Paul said could possibly be a step in the right direction, even though it is from the position of ignorance. You know, why not? Why would you trust Paul's rendition of God versus getting it from God himself? And why would you stop at belief when he can be known?
Well, I'm not saying
everything Paul said was untrue.
Exactly. But he painted that pretty picture for them that you just got to believe. Boom. There it is.
Yeah. And believe him.
And compared to just believe to, I got to walk this path. I got to study. I got to
observe it. I've got to observe this book.
I have to.
Which means I got to read it.
I have to
think about it.
These feasts that I have to do.
Yeah, oh God, I got to go to these parties. I hate parties. You hate parties. You got to get dressed up.
Well, what we're saying now.
No, you don't have to get dressed up.
What we're saying isn't hard to do, but it's not as easy as, I believe.
You know, going to a party, can you imagine how hard God is to shop for? I mean, what do you give the creator of the universe for a present?
Well, your present.
I mean, invited you to a party. You don't want to come, you know, without a bottle of wine or something. I mean, what do you give the creator of the universe? What a burden it is for him to have invited us to parties, and he already has everything. What do you buy him?
Your present.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, he didn't ask us for anything. Welcome back to Shatteredness. Kirk heard that it was easy question today, and learning that we were live, not dead, decided to call in.
I thought it was either live or Memorex. I guess that dates me, but gosh, I said, you know, that show, I think they're live. And
I think they're live.
Cool.
There you go. Yeah, and this next statement, it says, this one and only family of mine. Didn't Paul say that there was a New Testament,
mm-hmm.
a new covenant?
Yes. Went off and married somebody else.
How can there be a second one if God says I have got one and only?
One and only is one and only.
If there's a direct conflict between God and his testimony in first person and somebody who claims without any evidence to be speaking for him, and by the way, without a single accurate prophecy, to be speaking for him, who are you going to choose? You're going to choose God's testimony or the person who claimed to speak for God who contradicts him on an issue of this importance?
I think I'll stick with Yahweh.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with
Yahweh. This is so no-brainer. I mean,
it is.
In this light.
So why do people cling to the stupidity of Christianity when it is so obviously false? You know, you tell a Christian, I was with a very nice man this past weekend, and he was a Christian. And we talked about a number of different things. And I said, you know, when I gave him an example, I said, you know, the difference between a Muslim and a Christian, if I tell a Muslim that Muhammad was a false prophet, they'd kill me. But if I tell a Christian that their Jesus was a false prophet, they'd be disgusted by me and simply walk away. So you need to be discriminating. You need to exercise good judgment because you need to know what the average Muslim response would be and the average Christian response would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told him, I said, you know, by the way, those were not hypotheticals. Both are true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, you know, Paul was the founder of the Christian religion, and Paul lied about most everything he said. And this fellow came back and says, no, Jesus is the founder of the Christian religion. As a Christian, I'm a follower of Jesus.
Oh, really?
I said, then why don't you know his name? His name's not Jesus? No. His name's not Jesus. Not anything even close to Jesus. You don't know his name. If, let's just say you knew his name. You know, he was Torah observant. And he says, yeah, I know he's Torah observant. Are you Torah observant? Well, no. Well, how can you be following him if he was Torah observant and you're not? Huh. Well, you know, here is God following his own instructions. Yosha followed his own, followed Yahweh's instructions. Yahweh says, it's in your interest to be Torah observant, and Yosha is Torah observant. And yet, there's a religion that claims to be based on following him, and there's not a single person in that religion, not one, who's Torah observant. I mean, good grief, folks, it's not hard.
Didn't he tell all the disciples, walk with me? Well, what does that
mean?
Yeah. It means walk with
me. Follow me.
Go where I
walk
go,
with
where
me.
I do.
Right. Right. If Yosha participated in Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavua, for those of you who don't like or know Hebrew, Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, and the promise of seven. Why don't you? Why would you demean those things and say they're part of Judaism, and they don't pertain to me, and they don't pertain anymore, and you claim that you're following an individual who observed them, who kept them, who attended those invitations, who himself was the living embodiment of everything they represent?
Follow-up question. If that's Judaism, how come they don't do it?
Because Judaism isn't based on the Torah. That's,
I know.
That's one of the great myths. Christianity is not based, you know, they say that Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are all Abrahamic religions. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stupidity of the scholars. Abraham didn't have a religion, and that none of the three are based on Abraham.
No.
I mean, it's like me saying that I have a Washingtonian religion, and that Washingtonian religion is holy and completely disassociated from Freemasonry.
Oh, yeah.
I'd make a mockery of the actual man. The actual man, first and foremost, was a Freemason. And so if I had a religion that I said was a Washingtonian religion, and it had nothing in common with and everything distinct from Freemasonry, I'd be laughed at. So why isn't Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, why aren't they mocked? I have formed two conclusions based upon interpreting what Yahweh has told us. The first of those is that the only place to and only way to observe Yahweh's family is to read the Torah. Now that's an extrapolation from the material that is available to us. I used evidence and reason to come to the conclusion that there is no way possible to observe the covenant other than to read the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm right-brained and you're left-brained,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just resolutely logical, that's my liability, and you are resolutely observant in the sense of artistic, your perspective on things ought to be the opposite of mine.
No.
Could you challenge that? Could you come up with another way to observe Yahweh's family and his home other than reading the Torah?
There's absolutely no way to challenge that.
Even from an observant artistic perspective?
No, I mean, how? I mean, I can observe the letters, yeah. But that's the same as reading.
Yeah, that's the same as reading it. You could observe the nature of human families and the best qualities of them, and you could see shadows of the covenant in them. Yeah, but you would have no way to equate that without having read the Torah in the first place.
Absolutely.
All right, so the first conclusion, and I'd be happy to debate anyone out there, Christian, atheist, agnostic, Muslim, on that there is only one way to observe the covenant, to observe Yahweh's family and home. The only way to do that is to read the Torah. If you'd like to challenge that, be my guest. I think that is a conclusion that is irrefutable. But I'm going to tell you there's another conclusion. When Yahweh says that he wants us to observe his family home, I think there's only one reason that he wants us to do so. So that we can come to know what it is that he's offering, what he expects, and so that we can make connections between the things that he has said about it and thereby understand what it is that he's offering, so that we're in a position to exercise choice, free will.
Mm-hmm.
That's my conclusion based on the evidence. Let me read what God said, and you tell me if that, too, is irrefutable.
All right.
This one and only family covenant of mine, this one and only household and home of mine, which relationally and beneficially you should actually and continuously observe, is between me for the purpose of coming to know and understand me, and between you to cause you to be aware and to understand, making connections, and between your offspring so that they too might understand following you. For you to actually circumcise, mule, your every male for them to remember. Can observing the Torah lead to something other than understanding? If Yahweh repeats the Hebrew word for understanding three times in his second encouragement for us to closely examine and carefully consider what he had to say.
No.
He didn't mention just once. He wrote it three times.
Yeah.
And is there any chance, knowing that this is the individual who calculated exactly how much energy he had to speak into existence from the seventh dimension to create our universe, for it to be tuned to support life, and who could conceive and author DNA to support life? Do you think there's any chance that when he came up with the word for understand, and it happened to be the same word for making connections between things, that was by chance?
No chance.
No chance.
All well planned.
Well planned, yeah, exactly. And so the purpose of observing the covenant is not to know just a bunch of stuff that, you know, I used to say that, you know, when people would ask me questions and they'd say, you know, how do you know that? And I'm a virtual cesspool of irrelevant data. This stuff isn't irrelevant. And this stuff all leads to understanding. You can make the connections between the very jots and tittles, the pictures that the letters themselves paint. You can make connections and understand.
You cannot miss it.
And so Yahweh is asking us here to understand circumcision as essential to his covenant. He wants us to understand circumcision. He didn't say, I want you to do a ritual act which you do repetitively, and you just, like, you know, you bow down, you go to communion.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying that at all. He said, I want you to understand everything there is to understand, to know about circumcision. So circumcision is about cutting. Do you know anything else that's about cutting that would help us understand Yahweh's covenant?
Separation.
Yeah. How about when Yahweh says, I established the covenant, didn't the word that he used, isn't it karat? And doesn't the primary meaning of karat is to cut?
Yeah, we...
Do you want to be cut in or cut out?
I want to be cut in.
Absolutely.
Cut in the deal.
Right. And isn't circumcision about cutting and separating the foreskin from the male reproductive organ?
Pretty good metaphor.
And isn't the covenant about children being born into the family? In fact, isn't the Hebrew word for child born with an inheritance scribed with a with the first letter being a sperm?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that where it comes from?
Oh, that's the nun.
Yeah, but the letter is the nun where the sperm is depicted. But doesn't the sperm come from the very organ that's being circumcised?
Certainly.
So how do we miss it? How do people miss it?
You don't observe it.
Yeah, it's the only way you can miss it is not to observe it. So why do you think God encouraged us to observe it?
So we wouldn't miss it.
You know, this, I know it's funny, and this has been the day of easy answers, but there is no part of this that is hard, no part of this that is complicated. You don't need to be a scholar to get this.
Let me ask Thor out a question, if I may.
Okay.
Adam Weisfeld understood this, and he used, in order to replace religion, he had to give him a replacement religion. For him to follow, for him to change.
Right.
You can always change your mind by giving them that. But if the Almighty, if Yahweh wants you, just simply wants you of your own free will, of choice, to have a choice, to have a relationship with him, it just seems to scare everybody to death. Why does that frighten you so?
Yeah. You know, they want can you give me a synopsis of what he said? Why don't you write a one-page executive summary of what I need to do to be saved?
Yeah. And this
No. He's painting a picture here. He's trying to engage in dialogue with you. He wants you to listen to him. You know, if you don't find listening to him enjoyable, if you don't want to pay attention to what he has to say, if you don't want to observe his instructions, why in the world would he want to save you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wouldn't you be just an enormous drag on eternity and all of us that are that enjoy listening to him, that enjoy observing what he had to say? You know, I was kidding earlier. I said, you know, Scott was talking about how Paul's thing was so much easier. All you have to do is believe. And with Yahweh, you actually have to attend these parties.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and imagine going to a party and you think, you know, I'm going to a party. I've got to bring a gift. What do you buy? The guy just got everything, the creator of the universe. But wait a minute. He didn't want us to bring anything, did he?
No.
Come as you are. In fact, he wants you to leave everything behind, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
Rather than bring it, disassociate with whatever political title you might have, whatever military title you might have had, whatever citizenship you might have had, whatever religion and rank within that religion you might have had. He said, leave all that stuff behind. Does Yahweh ever tell us to bring our money?
No.
Does Yahweh have any use for money?
That's a shocker, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And he doesn't want us to bring anything. He has everything except a relationship with us. It's the only thing he wants us to bring. So, and just in case, you know, you weren't capable of understanding what he was talking about in circumcision, he wants you to make sure you understand. He says, and you shall cut off and separate, mul. Circumcise your foreskins, the fold of covering the conical tip of the masculine genitalia, in association with the flesh. So by telling you, I want you to cut something's association with the flesh, isn't he telling you that this covenant, when you're born as a child into this covenant, that you're going to be separated from the flesh?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other way to look at that other than you're going to be separated from the flesh?
Sure.
And why do Christians think there's going to be a bodily resurrection? You're going to run around with bodies in heaven?
I guess it's a want to. Or that's the
why would you want to?
Well, I know, but they don't know what they don't read this, so they don't they think they're going to come back to Earth and be a human being. I don't.
You know, I know Mrs. Kirk thinks you're a handsome and distinguished gentleman. But when you look in the mirror, do you see a figure looking back at you that you would like to sport for all eternity?
No, I didn't even like the early model. It was good.
You know, I remember what the early model of me and the middle model and the late now model of me looks like. And I guarantee you, the last thing I would want is to be trapped in this body for all eternity.
Oh,
you know, Scott just said we have Jason, formerly of Toronto, on the line, and it was my fault entirely, Jason. I got carried away in our discussion with Kirk and forgot you were on the line. I apologize.
That's okay. Yeah. No, I just wanted to talk a bit about, because, you know, circumcision being one of the requirements to in kind of one of the requirements to participate in the covenant.
Right. One
and,
five.
And I guess we're having a break now. I'll wait.
But go ahead. You can get another 20 seconds. And we'll return to you after the break. Okay. Well, we'll return to you after the break. Jason is correct. There are five criterion, five requirements for participating in the covenant. Yahweh has house rules, and it is his house. If you want to play, you need to know what they are. We have Jason from Toronto on the line. I'm going to give Jason all of this time, except, unfortunately, GCN is without an advertising traffic manager at the moment, and there were two longevity, or youngevity, as they call it now, ads during the segment. For anybody who doesn't know better, please don't buy the snake oil. That admonition aside, what were you going to say about the conditions of the covenant, Jason?
Well, saying you know those from observing the Torah, that's correct. Most people
right.
would come to the impression by many different denominations that simply believing that who they call Jesus is the Messiah and receiving, you know, his sacrifices, you know, to take care of their sins for them, that would be sufficient. It really,
yeah, of course. Now they're
really
believing. They're believing somebody whose name they don't know, whose title they corrupt, and whose words and deeds they pay no attention to, and they believe a person. They claim to believe a person who spoke on behalf of the Torah, which they dismiss.
And
they're just kidding themselves, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they've been led astray, just like in Matthew 24. A lot of people read that, and I think they even use quotes in there, which I think are misplaced. I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. But the Yahusha says that many will say that I'm the Messiah, and they'll lead many astray.
Yeah.
Of course, if you read it that way, it suggests with the quotations that a lot of people will come around saying that they are the Messiah. But if you read it without the quotes, it's more as if he's saying that they will say that Yahusha is the Messiah, although they mispronounce his name, and they'll lead many astray. And I would think that
course.
Would be more
what language,
because
what language
so many
did
more
Yahusha speak?
Where that happens.
Yeah, what language did Yahusha speak? Hebrew.
Hebrew.
And so in Hebrew it would have been eminently clear, and it was translated from Hebrew into Greek and then Greek to English. Are there quotation marks in Hebrew or Greek?
No.
So you would...
And you would have to go back to the Hebrew math. You would be your best chance to get to the...
Yeah, so you're... you know, I've never heard that presented that way, and that that would include Paul as the misleaders, because Paul said that he was the Messiah, the Messiah.
Way more interesting.
So vastly more consistent with reality and with Yosha's testimony. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So the confession of faith is misleading itself.
Oh yeah.
It runs right into that example.
The Christian profession of faith, doesn't it?
Yep. You'd only know that observing the Torah.
Of course, you would know that by observing the Torah. But all you have to do is remove the quotation marks, which did not exist in Hebrew, did not exist in Greek, from the religious copy edits of the testimony, and you have him completely undermine the profession of faith of the religion that is named after a misnomer of him.
Many of them, all the denominations pretty much, and every different one of them, they all confess that, you know, they all say that Yosh is Messiah, although they call him Jesus, and yet they completely mislead them at the point of the covenant itself.
Yeah, of course, one of the things that's so interesting is, do you know how many times that that Yosha is identified as the Masiyak in the Hebrew text? In the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you know, thousands of pages.
Yeah.
Only twice. And the two times that he is associated with the Masiyak, Masiyak is not used as a title. It's used as an adjective. It is it's an adjective that is modifying messenger. And it says that the messenger is set apart and prepared to serve.
Yeah. I always thought it was messenger of Yah.
Yeah. So it's, well, the term Masiyak means the one doing the work of Yahweh. But the term, as it appears, it only appears twice in Daniel, and both times that it's written in Daniel, it's not preceded with a definite article. It's not used as a noun. It's used as an adjective to modify the noun messenger. And so he is depicted as the one who is set apart and qualified to serve as a messenger, but not as a title. So it's really interesting for Christianity even to make that profession. Since Yahweh never makes the profession, Yosha never makes the confession. That's a brilliant analysis on something as simple as quotes denouncing the very religion that claims to follow him. Jason, that was spectacular. We'll be back tomorrow.